Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Kiwi, and with me is BP.
Hi! Welcome to date night.
Yeah.
Did that just sound weird?
It did sound a little weird. We'll see if Eric keeps it in.
Okay.
We are playing Mr. Jack, which was published in 2006, but re-released in 2016, and that's the version that we're playing. It was designed by Bruno Cathala, who also did Seven Wonders Duel, Five Tribes. Let's see, King Domino, we have also played. And Ludovic Mablanc, who did Cash and Guns, Terror in Meeple City, and some other stuff. Piero is the artist who did one of the Dixit expansions, did Ghost Stories, and some other things. And it was published by Hurricane Games without an E in Hurricane, not in games, not Hurricane Games.
So Hurricane.
Hurricane. Hurricane Games. Yeah. So the description is 1888, London, Whitechapel District. The night covers the gloomy alleys with a veil of darkness.
I'm already scared.
Jack is moving in the shadows. The finest investigators of the Gaslight Age have gathered here to catch him before he uses the darkness to slip away for good. The trap is slowly closing upon him, but Jack is cunning. He is in fact impersonating one of the investigators. Will the others unmask him?
Okay, like before you move on. Okay, no, before you move on. Okay, so first he uses the darkness. Is that like the dark force? So are we talking Darth Vader? But then I think of that episode that you listened to of, I think it was the Adventure Zones when they were on their ship.
What is it? I think it's four Sherlock Holmeses and a vampire where one of the Sherlock Holmeses is said vampire.
Yeah, and they all play different Sherlock Holmeses. All right, mechanics, tell me about them. Do I know any of them?
Probably. Grid movement and variable player powers.
Oh, that's pretty easy. I know variable players.
Like there's probably some extra ones that just aren't listed on Board Game Geek.
Okay.
But those are it.
Okay.
And then the cover is it. Yeah, the box art is like a cartoony style, but I would say like maybe late 80s. U.S. cartoons.
Yeah, or even 90s.
Like half of it is dark. Yeah, maybe early 90s. And you've got what looks like Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson with pants.
Looking over a body.
Looking at a body of a woman, it looks like. And there's like some shadows being cast by a lamp. And then there's like an ominous guy with a top hat and a trench coat, and he's shoving a knife in his pocket, and he's kind of hiding around the corner. And then the title is in like that, I just kidnapped somebody and I'm going to cut out letters from a newspaper or a magazine.
Right. And then it says Whitechapel Street. So it's, you know, and it's Hurricane, even though it's got a hurricane symbol in it. We're neither here nor there. Yeah. It looks like it's trying to be like streets of 19th century London. I mean, with all of that, the box art is, I mean, what you would expect for a Sherlock Holmesy game. So nothing to like necessarily write home about. Like, but I mean, I personally am a fan of Sherlock Holmes and the Victorian era. So yeah, I mean, the art actually reminds me a little bit of Inspector Gadget. That 1980s, 90s, yeah, cartoony art.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I might, especially knowing, like, if it were just the two of us and we were at a board game cafe or someplace and it was like, hey, here are two player games. And I was like, oh, I need a game for date night. And I love detecting movies. Maybe I could get my husband to play a game like this with me.
Yeah, so I'll play it with you. Obviously, that's what we're going to do. I'm not sure I would pick it up just because I haven't had... Like the mystery deduction style games, I tend to not particularly care for.
Right.
And
you entertain me.
The other reason I wouldn't pick it up is because it's designed by Bruno Cathala.
I don't.
And so far, he did King Domino, Five Tribes, and Seven Wonders Duel. Seven Wonders Duel, Eric and I played with each other in a very early episode. I think it was like 3 or 4.
Right.
But you've played Five Tribes and King Domino.
And we were unimpressed.
I think King Domino was okay. Hey. Five Tribes, we definitely were. I don't think any of us would play it again. So I probably wouldn't, just because I'm kind of 0-3 for Bruno Cathala games.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, we'll try it for 4.
Yeah. So how do you think it's played?
Okay. So variable player action, right? variable yep. player powers and grid movement were the only options I have to, plus the storyline. So, okay. Well, knowing Sherlock Holmes games, and I am obviously a big fan of them because I still own a 221B Baker Street. You all got me Sherlock Holmes Detecting, and we've done the other Sherlock Holmes series. A little bit of a fan. Grid movement makes me think of the 221B Baker Street idea, because in that game you do actually, right, like move along a game board.
Yes, it's got like a Clue-esque type movement, doesn't it? Because don't you roll dice?
Yeah, you roll dice and then you have to go to different locations and then there you get clues. But this is variable player actions, and the game description made it sound like Jack the Ripper could be one of the investigators. It didn't name traitorism as one of the mechanics, and I don't know if that's a technical term or not, but...
Yeah, I think hidden role traitor mechanic okay. is usually...
Oh, well, that wasn't mentioned, so we don't think that one Correct. Of us is going to be actually Jack the Ripper, but I think, like, we're going to be assigned roles, like, maybe you're going to be Inspector Lestat, and I'm going to be Sherlock Holmes, and so, like, I'll have certain abilities that you won't once we get to certain locations. Like, dice rolling was not part of it, but there's going to have to be some way we move along the grid. So I'm going to throw in dice rolling. Yep. Okay. Yep. 221B Baker Street meets multiverse or something.
Sentinels of the multiverse?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm going. Okay. Okay.
So what do you got for me? You got history of Jack the Ripper or history of Sherlock Holmes? Ugh. What do you got?
Ooh, I could go either way. Like, okay. History of Sherlock Holmes is really interesting. Especially since people have tried to identify Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, but I didn't go that route because it wasn't technically a Sir Arthur Conan Doyle written story. Although Jack the Ripper and Sherlock Holmes usually get kind of mixed just because I think Sherlock Holmes and the idea of Sherlock Holmes was written while the Jack the Ripper stories were going on in Victorian London. So set the stage, we've got, right, I mean, industrialization had been going on by this point for over 100 years in England, but add to that imperialism and economic boom, and London is just teeming. In addition, like within like the last like couple of decades, many of Irish have been leaving Ireland because I don't know if you've ever heard of this little thing called the potato famine. But yeah, basically the Irish are fleeing the island. And so many of them and other immigrants from the country have ended up in London. And so London is still dealing with a lot of the kind of transition into, you know, the modern urban city that it is now. In the 1850s, they had just tried to begin the project to update their sewer systems, but that took, you know, several decades to actually complete. So in the interim, like the whole place is riddled with poverty, slums, cholera, you know, real social tensions between rich and poor. And enter into that a serial killer who is looking after, basically, you know, stalking apparently prostitutes in general, which get targeted a lot during this period anyway, because middle class women were supposed to maintain this certain type of lifestyle, which we now have come to call the cult of domesticity. And what they really also like to do is think that their livelihood and their lifestyle was superior to others. So they like to apply that to others. And so prostitutes got, God, they really had like the downturn on them. Because one, obviously, like you usually only turn to that out of desperation. And two, like many of these women were then subjected not just to sexism, but also racism and, you know, kind of moralism, social Darwinism. And you then put Jack the Ripper into all of that as a story, and just prostitutes and like slum neighborhoods in general just became riddled with these ideas of, you know, obviously uncleanliness, but also moral decay. Wow. That went dark real fast. Welcome to history class. It did.
Yeah. So would you like me to tell you the rules?
Sure. Go.
All right. So one of us is going to be the detective and one of us is going to be Jack.
Variable Jack player, apparently. And now we've got the fox in the hunt. Okay, got it. Let's go.
All right. Jack wins if they are able to leave the Whitechapel district through an exit that does not have a police cordon and while they are invisible, or if they are not caught by the end of the eighth round, or if the detective accuses the wrong character of Jack. The detective wins if they are able to move a character into the same hex as Jack and correctly accuse them of being Jack.
Oh, God. So hard. This is...
All right.
Okay, this is really like Fox and the Hunter.
Maybe a little bit. So, prior to starting, whoever is going to be Jack will draw one of the alibi cards. And on those alibi cards are each of the eight... one card equates to one of the eight characters, and that is going to tell Jack which character they are. The detective will go first during odd numbered rounds, and Jack will go first during even numbered rounds. So each round is broken into four phases. In the first phase, we're going to choose and use the characters. So during odd numbered rounds, the detective is going to draw the first four character cards and place them face up. During even number rounds, so we're going to draw the first four and place them face up so everybody can see them. And then we would draw the second four and play them for the odd numbered round. So we're going to go through the deck over the course of two rounds. The first player will choose a character among the four and play them by either moving their token or using their special ability. The other player will then activate two characters in the same way, and then the first character will activate the last one. In the second phase, we're going to call for witnesses. Once all four characters have been moved, Jack must declare if they are visible or not visible. Jack is visible if the character is in a lit hex, around a lit gas lamp, or next to another character. Otherwise, Jack is not visible. The detective then knows that the opposite characters are innocent and flips them to their innocent side. So the tokens for the characters have a innocent side and a non-innocent side. And Jack must be invisible before they can attempt to leave the map in the next round. Phase three, we shut off the gas. We shut a gas light off. So during the first four rounds, remove the lit gas lamp with the current round number on it. This light has shut off. And then finally, end of round, move the round counter to the next round. And at the end of even numbered rounds, shuffle the character cards before returning to step one. And that is it.
Who's Jack? Who's the detective?
Well, I was going to let you decide. Do you want to try and be Jack and get away? Or do you want to try and deduce who is Jack?
I think we know the answer to this question.
You want to deduce and be Sherlock Holmes.
Of course I do. The game is afoot. Let's play.
We just got finished playing a round or a game, I guess, of Mr. Jack. Kiwi, I was Jack. I pulled Jeremy Burt, the
Jeremy Brett.
Press. Well, it says Burt, and it also says Burt in the instruction booklet. So it's Jeremy Burt.
Yeah, but Jeremy Brett was the first Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, but I don't. It's not the first. It's just a. Just it's a reporter. Going. So Jeremy Burt. The reporter was who Jack was posing as, but BP was able to discern who Jack was and made the correct accusation using Miss Stealthy at the very beginning of the fifth round. So BP, what was your winning strategy?
I was just thinking about that and I was like, you know, I don't just what you should do as a cop, pull everybody towards the light or towards somebody else. And then basically once it had been like elimination and figured out who it was like, all right, now I just got to cut off exits and figure out how I get closer to this person.
Yeah, I think the strategy for the detective in this is you really want to try and like take out half the suspects at a time. Mm-hmm. So try to have half the people visible and half the people not visible. So my strategy is I was trying to always keep Jack in the largest group.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't able to get it there. I think the round four, or maybe it was round three. That's when, I think it was three. That's when you figured out who Jack was, because he ended up being the only one who wasn't visible because you moved a lamppost.
Mm-hmm.
And so that exposed him. And since he was the only one invisible at the time, you knew exactly who it was. Mm-hmm. So, but that was my strategy. And I think as the detective, you're always trying to like cut it in half. Because if you can cut it in half, in theory, you should know who it is by round four. And then you have four rounds to catch the guy.
So statistics, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, mathematically speaking.
Sure, sure, sure.
So a theme. What did you think about the theme?
Meh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The Sherlock Holmes fan looking up stuff about Sherlock Holmes. While we were playing.
Yeah. Well, because the Jeremy Brett. I feel like the names and characters, like all of that played into it. But like, as far as how the mechanics and then everything fit in, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like this, I mean, you could have made this anything. You could have made it like a bunch of burglars.
Yeah.
And they're trying to like, one of them has a gym and you're all trying to like get that gym because you want it. Like, yeah. I feel like it could have been that. Like, yeah.
It's
so
just
I agree.
A process
like,
of elimination game.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe a little deduction. But yeah, theme wise, I feel like not necessarily tacked on, but I don't think the theme was super important. Mm-mm. I think they just art names. That's really the only thing that brought the theme in.
Yeah.
Speaking of art.
Yeah. I'm kind of disappointed actually. Like, I mean, the cards themselves are cute ish, but like being a big Sherlock Holmes fan, like, I don't know. They just seem a little like, again, Inspector Gadgety. And then the board, it's kind of disconnected, like we almost said the other day, from the rest of the art, where like the cards with the characters seem kind of like dark and gothy Victorian-esque. And then the board is light and cartoony and mushroomy and kind of smurfish, you know, like.
Yeah, the cards are definitely like because I think they talked about it. It was a dark and foggy night.
Well, yeah, Jack the Ripper is like serious dark stuff. Like, you don't just bring Jack the Ripper into anything.
Yeah, well, what I was saying is I think the cards play more into that game description than mm-hmm. the board does. Mm-hmm. So I agree. I don't think, like, I will disagree in that I don't think the map board and the art style, like, I think there's definitely a difference between like how dark in color the cards are and how light in color the map is. But I think art style wise, I think they do go together. So I don't think it's as bad as Downforce that in theory we won't actually play for a good number of episodes. So peek behind the curtain and in the order in which we played these games. So that's a spoiler, I guess. Congratulations. I don't think there's a disconnect art wise. I think there's just a disconnect in terms of, what would you call that? Hue?
Sure.
Brightness is actually probably a better. Mechanics wise, like as a deduction game, I did think it was interesting that everybody is playing the same characters. You're just picking a card to play that character. So you picked Jeremy Brett in like turn three. And that's sort of what.
I appreciate that you called him Jeremy Brett.
Yeah. Well, I read it wrong. and that messed me up because I had a plan for him. And that plan got messed up because you took them, but I mean, you took them for other reasons than why I wanted them. And the idea that like, I have to tell you, like Jack has to tell the detective whether the visible or invisible, like I liked that mechanic. So like the rules themselves and the mechanic, I liked the combination of all that stuff. I thought it was interesting. It's more of like, I don't know. I would almost go sort of abstract-y strategy. Cause I feel like you could have made this an abstract strategy game and you would have gotten the same result. What do you think of the mechanics, BP?
I mean, yeah, I think it was, I mean, a little bit more interesting than like the Fox and the Hunter in that, right, we had this shared pool of players and there was that aspect of almost chess-likeness with the two-player deduction where you have to figure out like, what is this person going to do next? Like, which character do they want to be able to move? Like, whomever they are supposed to be based on what I have left. So in that sense, I think it added a uniqueness. I mean, there were only two listed, and I guess there really are only two player.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for, I mean, it's simple.
Yep.
And it feels simple. But that's okay sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was a 25-minute game, and
yeah.
that was it.
Yeah.
What was your feeling in learning the game?
Sounded way more complicated in the beginning.
Yeah. The rule book is, you know, it lays everything out. I did have to read some sections more than once, but the only thing I had to go back and look at in the rule book was what was mandatory and what wasn't. Mm-hmm. Just some of the player abilities. And that was more of a, like I made these show notes a while ago. And so had I gotten on and looked at again, like every time we podcast, I should have gone back and reviewed.
It's all right. Cause just
real quick,
I was just like, hey, you know, an hour ago or so was like, hey, let's have an impromptu date night. Let's podcast. And so it was really, you did a fantastic job.
Thanks. Yeah. So the rule book is good. Easy to teach. I feel like I think we did have it by round two. So yeah, I have no complaints. Player interaction. I would say that this is direct. I mean, it's a two-player game. It really has to be direct.
Yeah. I mean, you are thinking about what the other person wants to accomplish and how you can thwart them in that accomplishment.
And there's definitely like other things that the Jack player could do that could possibly give away the character, because you have those several characters that are able to move lampposts. You can move the cordons. You can move open up different manholes. Mm-hmm. So there are ways that you could potentially like give yourself away as well without, you know, being revealed or unrevealed. So I think there are different ways to go about it. But yeah, definitely direct. So, I mean, the question of the podcast,
the big question, would you play it again,
the
Kiwi?
Big question. I think I would.
Yeah.
Theme wise, like it didn't really grab me, but I think of all the Bruno Cathala games, I like this one the best because it's simple and it's fast. You know, my original apprehension for picking up the game is I generally don't care for games with Sherlock Holmes because they generally are more puzzly. And I don't think this is never necessarily puzzly. I think it's more like a strategy type game. So it fit into more games that I like.
Okay.
So BP, would you play this again?
Yes, as much as it's not a Sherlock Holmes game, I still probably would. I think I agree with of the three that we've played, since I didn't play Seven Wonders, I've only played King Domino, Five Tribes. I think it's just because it was so quick and simple, like it's just an easy, you know, throw together game that is light and entertaining enough.
Yeah. So you brought up Fox and the Hound a couple times as your comparison game. So I will then have to ask, we'll ask another question beyond the big question. So if you had to choose between this or Fox and the Hound, what would you play?
That was tough. I really liked this simplicity of Fox and the Hound, just because it was just that box full of just the tiles. And that was fantastic. Right. But I think for the same kind of element, this one just added a little bit more flavor that was more entertaining and light, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I would probably gravitate towards this because I personally tend to gravitate towards I mean, especially depending on what my mood is, but I generally tend to gravitate towards lighter games, unless I'm like fully, like I've planned ahead and I'm prepared to like, I'm going to sit down for 3 to 4 hours of Gloomhaven. Otherwise, like, I'm just like, ooh, give me something that's like, you know, 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think when I first thought, okay, I'm going to ask BP this question now that she's brought up Fox and the Hound, I thought my answer was going to be Fox and the Hound. But the more we talk about it and then just like looking at the game board itself, I feel like this would be a much easier, much faster game to set up, because you don't have to set up all those tiles like in Fox and the Hound, because it was what, like 49 tiles or something crazy like that. Like, there definitely is not that many in this game. And then it's only 8 cards that you're playing with over time. And I think it would be a much easier game to teach, because as soon as you go through the 8 characters, the 8 characters always do the same thing. Whereas with the The Hunter, you had, what was it, like three different dogs, plus mm-hmm. the Hunter moved its own way. So I think it'd be a little bit harder to teach. Whereas, you know, when I do Sherlock Holmes the first time, you get to see how Sherlock Holmes mm-hmm. works. And then we don't have to do it again. Mm-hmm. So I think setup wise and just quickness, like I would probably go with this, but I do still love, or I really liked Fox and the Hound just because it was a different theme. It was cute and it was fun. But yeah, I think I would pick this if I was teaching somebody, if I was playing with somebody that I already knew and already knew the game, I would probably play Fox and the Hound.
Yeah. I feel like if Eric were playing, I feel like he would appreciate Fox and the Hound more than this.
Yeah. I think the thing about Fox and the Hound is like that was definitely more of an abstract-y strategy mm-hmm. game. Whereas I think this game tried to hide as something else, but when you boil it down to it, it really is just an abstract strategy mm-hmm. game. All right. And that is it. That is our episode on Mr. Jack. Take us out.
So this concludes Mr. Jack and our night of Victorian serial killers, apparently. But if you have any other recommendations for two-player games that you'd like to hear, either a Kiwi BP duo, maybe another Kiwi Eric episode, or more Kiwi Eric episodes, or just Sherlock in general, since you may now know that BP is a big fan, send them our way. Send our way, your comments on Fox and the Hunter, or if you have also played Mr. Jack, you can do that at firstturntabletop@gmail.com or Twitter, Instagram, firstturncast. And if there were a podcasting camel in Victorian London, he would probably sound something kind of like, "Well then, please, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe." That is no British accent.
What was that?
No British accent.
Oh my gosh.
You're forwarded.
Well then, Mr. Watson, please forget. I'd mess it up too.
Please don't forget to write. Now I sound Australian. just rate, review, and subscribe on any of your favorite podcatchers. And if you could, just send us your British podcasting camel. We'd love it. Thank you very much. And play more games.
Card.
I know, because Sherlock Holmes, he's like the ace in the hole, isn't he? He is the man.
Yeah.
I almost want John Smith to be Jon okay. Snow, and then we could make so many Game of Thrones reference and cholera references. No,
and then we're going to get
another cease and desist.
Also, Eric, when you edit this, take note, it wasn't me who derailed it.